Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Joined in the studio by Hester McDonald for Dig It, talking today about the autumn harvest. Are we harvesting? Is it time, Hester?
I think it probably is.
Excellent.
I mean, it's all ripe, so I think we should be picking it.
Great, let's do it.
Let's do that.
How and what are we harvesting?
We are harvesting all of the top fruit, which is apples and pears, the last of the soft fruit, which is things like blackberries and loganberries, and also anything out of the garden, the last of the beans, the pumpkins, the squash. What on earth do you do with all those tomatoes? All of that.
Yeah, what do you do with all of those tomato? I didn't manage to grow any this year. Didn't happen. But today we're going to be looking at what to, as you say, what to do with them. But there is kind of an order of things that you should maybe look at. Certain things which you can keep and you can keep for a long old time and ways to keep them, but also things that are best eaten fresh. What are some of those?
So I would say things like apples and pears are usually wonderful fresh, unless they are keeping apples and pears. So in things that are like heritage cultivars, if the word hiver, winter, is in the name, it probably means it's a keeping apple. So it will be wonderful fresh, but it will also be great, probably through till February, some of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Need to make them into a little compote or something.
Not even? No. So because lots of these older varieties were developed before refrigeration or even, you know, kind of fairly reliable canning, they were intended to be kept safely until after Christmas.
What about things like herbs? They're easy to grow.
Yeah. So anything fleshy, anything with flattish fat leaves like basil would be a great example, best eaten fresh, really. Anything that's got quite a woody stem, like thyme or something like that, or rosemary, most of them you can leave outside in the outdoor fridge, which we love the outdoor fridge. If you want to pick them and dry them, you can do so by putting your oven on for something else so we don't waste electricity. And then when you switch your oven off for whatever else you're cooking, put the door open and put them in. And it will just dry them enough because most houses aren't hot enough and most ovens aren't hot enough and cookers aren't hot enough to what people used to do is suspend them around the range. And most people don't have a range anymore.
I don't have a range.
I definitely don't have a range because it would make my house very, very hot.
So what about in terms of other things that are best just keeping them? How do we look at maybe keeping and storing some of the things that we might be harvesting now?
So I would say things like pumpkins and what are known as winter squash. So there's a difference between the Americans make the distinction between winter and summer squash. So summer squash are things that have very soft rinds, very soft skins and aren't ever going to harden up. Something like a typical kind of Cinderella pumpkin or a butternut squash, they're winter squash and they overwinter brilliantly for months and months and months and months. You just need to make sure that the rind is hard enough. And the way you do that is literally give it a poke with your fingernail. That's it. If it doesn't leave a dent, it's ripe enough.
There's the test.
That's basically it. So you need to just clean them off because they've usually got fairly muddy on their undersides and put them somewhere clean and out of reach of animals. Mice are a pest for this kind of thing, which is why people used to hang them up or put them up on the rafters of places to keep them out of the way. So pumpkins, wheat and squash, onions would be another great one. Typically you would let them dry properly, dust them off of any mud and then hang them or twist them, which would be the traditional thing to do. You twist the tops together in a lovely plait. Carrots are traditionally kept in sand.
Are they?
Yeah. Yes,
does that
you
work?
Lay them in sand. Yeah, it's clean. Sand is entirely neutral as a substance to surround. So the same, just give them a brush, brush off any of the mud. Try and keep them out of humidity, which is what the sand is for too, because obviously it helps to dry them out as well. And they're kept in sand. And you can put them in boxes and keep them in a garage or, you know, a light-free space for absolutely months and months and months.
You would really have to actually, I think, make sure that you wash them really well before you eat them. Otherwise, that bit of sand in your teeth.
Yes, a little bit on
really
the gritty
nasty
side. But I would also say take the tops off for that sort of thing too, so that they keep better because the tops will rot and will dry out the carrots. I mean, you can make carrot pesto. It's absolutely delicious out of the tops.
Carrot pesto?
Yeah, the tops taste quite carroty. They're really nice. And you make pesto out of them. Absolutely delicious.
One thing apparently you can keep are potatoes. Now, if I keep potatoes, they grow a life of their own.
Yeah.
So how do I keep them?
So dry, a frost-free place. You keep them in the fridge. That really helps as well. And some potatoes, obviously, you can leave outside.
In the cold.
In the cold, in your outdoor fridge.
Outdoor fridge.
Yeah, back to the outdoor fridge, absolutely.
What things do you need to go as far as to actually freeze?
So I would say anything that, like, beans and peas are brilliant frozen. You can either blanch them first, so kind of flash cook them and then put them in, or just chop them up and put them in as they are, because they cook so quickly from frozen that they're absolutely brilliant. Leeks, if you don't really have space for them elsewhere, cut them into rounds. Mm. Just chop them up, stuff them in a freezer bag and lay them flat and job done. They cook super quickly. If you throw them into soup or something in the winter, you get that lovely oniony, leaky taste and you're good to go.
Okay. Now, coming up a little bit later, we'll be looking at lacto-fermentation, something that you can actually do to your veggies to prep them so that they stay over the winter. We'll be looking at that. Hester, stay with us.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Coming up, we'll be talking about lacto-fermentation, things that you can do to keep your veggies edible for a very long time indeed. But Hester, what can you just bung outside and it really will keep?
Oh, let's see. Leeks, any of the brassicas, cabbages, broccoli, Brussels, beets as well. We'll be quite happy outside. Swiss chard is beautiful as well. Ornamentally speaking, it's absolutely gorgeous. Parsnips too. In fact, they're much better after the first frost, so you should leave them outside.
You should
leave them outside.
They get better after
They do, yeah. The sugars change structure in it. That's why they're sweeter after they've been frosted.
Did not know.
I know, lovely, right? And then there's also all sorts of things you can sow now, things like winter spinach, winter chicory, and some of the winter lettuces that are fully hardy that can go in now and you can eat, you know, as you wish over the winter.
Very quickly, as we said, we will be talking about lacto-fermentation. Why do you rate this as a process and a good way to keep veg?
It's super easy and it's really good for your guts.
All right, well, there we go. It's something that we'll be looking at and finding out how to do, because I like something that is easy. We'll be looking at lacto-fermentation with a pro, with a specialist. This is with Dig It and Hester McDonald. Stick around.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
I've got some of your questions coming in. Some of you talking about having too many veggies from the latest harvest and concerned about what to do with them. So stay tuned. We will get through your questions in just a little bit. But Hester, you have some great ideas and one of them is give them away as gifts.
Yeah.
So how do we do this?
So I would say think about kind of jewel bright, pretty coloured pickles, chutneys. And actually, if you look online, there are hundreds of recipes. They don't all have to taste of vinegar. There's loads of kind of Indian style pickles, lots of things like that, which would make beautiful Christmas gifts. Just put them in a nice jar, little ribbon on it, and there you go. Thank you very much.
That's quite nice to have something homemade. What makes a good gift in a jar?
I would say think colour, think brightly coloured. So anything that's got, you know, deep colours like purples and oranges and things like that in it, or pestos or anything else like that, really.
OK. All right. You also mentioned things like kimchi.
Yeah, I love kimchi. I don't know about you. My husband thinks it smells and I think it smells amazing. I absolutely love it. It's a Korean pickle, which is eaten with lots and lots of meals, including breakfast to my delight. And it's incredibly good for your guts. It's really fantastic. The idea, it supports your gut biome and helps your gut to sort out the good guys from the bad guys and generally makes you healthier. It's great.
All right. All round a good thing.
Yeah, good gift.
In terms of a gift. Lacto-fermentation is a process that you can do to store things and store them for longer. What's different about it between, what's different between
it and pickling, say?
Yeah, yeah.
So pickling, the end state is stable. So once you pickle something, the taste doesn't change. It doesn't change. Nothing happens to it because once it's pickled, that's it. And it's done in vinegar. Lacto-fermentation is a living process and it's super easy. I have to say, I had thought really until a couple of weeks ago, it was quite fiddly and it probably wasn't for me and I couldn't be bothered. And having watched a workshop of it, it is so unbelievably easy. I will be doing lots of lacto-fermentation this winter.
Love things that are easy. Who was teaching the workshop?
So it's Stéphane Repas-Mendaz, who is the scientific curator at the Château de Pontjean and is a colleague and a friend as well. And he was running the atelier and he runs lots of these workshops and they're absolutely brilliant.
We're going to hear from him now. This is Stéphane.
It's a method to conserve the vegetables for a long period of time. Do you know choucroute, sauerkraut? It's a lacto-fermentation process. You need vegetables, salt, and sometimes water, and that's it. You need a jar which allow the gases to go out, but nothing can go in. You can ferment pumpkins, carrots, beetroots. Then you wash your vegetables. Okay. If the skin is soft and nice, you can keep it. The more you keep, better it is. And then you slice it, you cut it, you whatever you want. You put between 1 and 3% of the weight in salt.
Yeah.
Like for 100 grams of vegetables, you put
one gram of salt.
You mix the vegetables. You for like 5-6 okay. minutes. You massage the vegetables.
You massage
like
your veg,
it.
Yeah.
And you put it in the jar. You
squidge it down.
Bien fort, bien yeah. au fond du jar.
Like really squish it. In.
Yeah, definitely. You put the juice you have yeah. in the bowl. You close the jar and you wait for at least 6 days. And after 6 days, you have that little acidity.
Yeah.
It's still crunchy.
Yeah. But so you can already eat them then.
Yeah, but you can wait like for this jar with sauerkraut yeah. as 1 year and 3
so
months.
It's a living process, right?
Yeah.
Because you have two types of bacteria. The first guys go in and then die, and then the second guys take over.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, if you, I told you about keeping the skin.
Yeah.
It's because the more skin you keep, the more microorganism you keep.
And so the better for your guts it is.
Yeah, and you have to wash your hands, but not wash them with alcohol. Like wash with water.
That's it.
And that's it.
It's it's ready. It's like gut magic.
Gut magic, says Hester McDonald. So just to recap, how do you do the measurements?
So you need 1 to 3 grams of salt for 100 grams of chopped vegetables.
And what veggies work better?
Crunchy ones, basically. Mm-hmm. Nothing squishy, because that's not delicious. Nobody likes squishy sauerkraut.
Love that. All right. If you expect a Christmas present from Hester this year, we know what you're going to be getting.
You are. And in fact, I already have a photograph of it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'll put it up.
I love that. All right, Hester, we're going to go through some listener questions in just a moment. If you've got any last minute questions, send them in now, particularly if they're about the autumn harvest. You can send them in studio@worldradio.ch or 939 on the text. Start your message off with WRS.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Hester's ready to answer your questions. Thanks so much for everyone that's written in. We've got some questions. Hester, are you ready?
I am.
All right, we've got Paul who wrote in to ask, how do I harvest and keep the mirabelles from the tree in my new garden? There are so many and I cannot give them away.
I love this.
Just one tree.
Just one tree. Yes, mirabelles can really crop. If they've had a good year, they have a really, really good year. Now, if you don't know what mirabelles are, they're my favourite plum. They're little teeny tiny plums, not really much taller than your thumb, I'd say, in total. Generally yellowish. Ooh, try saying that with your teeth out. And they come mostly from the region of Alsace. So there's lots from Mirabelle de Nancy, Mirabelle of that region. They're very sweet and they make the most wonderful jams, purees. They freeze brilliantly. So halve them, take the stones out and freeze them flat on trays. And then you can put them into Ziploc bags or into boxes. They do really well. But I think, Paul, this might be some of your Christmas gifts. Mm. I think you might be making Mirabelle jam. Or you can steep them in alcohol.
Sorry, what?
You can steep them in alcohol. So as if you were making slow gin. So if you've never made slow gin, basically you take sloes, which are dry blackthorn fruit, which are these beautiful kind of semi-like native plums, and you prick them all over and you put them in gin for absolutely ages till Christmas, basically, and then you drain them and you drink the gin, which is then beautiful plum colour and obviously, you know, neat alcohol, but it makes really great mixes for champagne at Christmas, by the way.
Paul, I don't have any, but if you have any spare,
we'll have them.
Yeah
Kat and I, we're totally up for Mirabelles.
But I would appreciate it if I could take it after it's been made into gin. rather than before, but I won't be too fussy.
Meat's fine too, yeah.
Paul, I hope that answers your question. Frida has messaged in. Frida says, Hester, what's the best way to preserve tiny carrots? Again, we have loads. Tiny carrots, though.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure whether this was the variety, because some carrots are, but they're little, or whether they just didn't really develop over the summer, which, you know, with a very short rainfall summer, that's entirely likely. Mm. So I would say you can probably leave them in a little bit longer if you haven't picked them already. You can probably leave them in, you know, another couple of months and see if they plump up a bit. And if you've decided, or maybe, you know, you might be short of the space in the garden, you want to use it for something else and you're just done with the garden for now. In which case, I'd say pick them. Like I said earlier, you can make the tops into carrot pesto, which is delicious. Either eaten fresh, keeps in the fridge for about a week, or you can actually freeze it as well. Or I would say cook them and freeze them. So blanch them and freeze them or chop them up. They actually keep really well in the fridge if they've got no mud on them and you've taken the tops off them. They keep in the fridge for at least a couple of weeks. Or you could pickle them. You could lacto ferment them and they'd be beautiful. Imagine chopped up little teeny tiny pieces of delicious carrot. Yum.
There it is. We've also got Helen. Here we go. I'm going to move quickly through these questions because we've got a few coming in. Our butternut squash aren't really ripe and I'm worried if the temperature falls in the next few weeks, they'll freeze and I'll lose them. Not something that we're worried about today with the warm temperatures, but what if it does fall in the next few weeks?
But it's a good point. So I would say the longer they're outside, the better. If you can get them off the ground, because the ground is actually getting quite cool now, so that means you put a, you know, roof tile or, you know, piece of sacking or something underneath and get them off the ground, because that will help them to ripen. Leave them out as long as possible. Really keep an eye on the weather, because it can go quickly, but even down to sort of 5 degrees, it's not going to damage them at all. As soon as you know it really is going to frost, whip them indoors if November hasn't already come around. Get them indoors and they can carry on ripening. If they still aren't ripe, cheat and put a banana next to them.
Oh, of course. You just put the banana next to anything that needs to be ripened.
The banana gives off loads of ethylene and that will ripen your fruit.
As we're ready to harvest, we've got a prize from Shilliger Garden Centre to give away. I'll tell you how you can get into that draw. But Hester, can you tell us what prize we've actually got?
These are some fabulous Crazy Line secateurs from Layout. Layout's a very old Swiss producer of secateurs and they are great colours, so you don't lose them in the garden. Very lightweight, perfect for smaller branches and stems, and they've got anti-rust and anti-sap covering on the blades.
Excellent. That's what we've got to give away. All I want you to do today, if you want to get into that draw, is tell me any of the things that we have mentioned today that you would quite like to eat. That's it. There's no right or wrong answer. Anything that we have mentioned today that you think, I would like to eat that or I would like to drink that, you just let us know. studio@worldradio.ch or 939 on the text. Start your message off with WRS. You'll go into the draw. Coming up, we'll have the Swiss news at the bottom of the hour. After that, Hester will tell us about some events coming up and what plants should we be buying and planting this month.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre in Gland and Plan-les-Ouates. Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
I have to say the slow gin that you mentioned earlier with the Mirabelles is very, very popular. We're asking you this morning if you would like to get into the draw for some Crazy Line secateurs from Layout, courtesy of Shilliger Garden Centre. All you need to do is tell us any of these autumn harvest goodies that you quite like the sound of. We've got Linda who said it had to be the slow gin that you mentioned. Also, we've got Gerhard who said some of that Mirabelle jam would be rather nice. All about the Mirabelles.
Mirabelles are lovely.
Sue also said, I had a garden full of Mirabelles. It was a great idea to make fruity gin. So you really touched.
There you go. I have to credit Helvetic Kitchen, which is a wonderful website if you've never come across it, full of Swiss recipes, and she calls it boozy plums.
Boozy plums.
Yeah.
AKA the Mirabelles. Yeah, exactly. Turns out loads of them on one tree as well.
Yeah.
From Paul. Thank you. So there we go. We'll keep that competition open for just a little bit if you would like to get into the draw for those secateurs that we've got. Thanks very much to Shilliger Garden Centre for giving us that lovely prize to give away. Hester, what events should we be putting in our diary this very month? What's going on in October?
Well, so actually this weekend in Chantilly in Paris is the Journée des Plantes. It's interesting. So they have an autumn event and they have a spring event, and the autumn one's coming up imminently. It's in the park of the Château de Chantilly. Should you be in Paris, if you're fancy a little outing to Chanteuse. It's beautiful. It's really the who's who and the good and the great of French gardening and plants, with wonderful nurseries showcasing beautiful plants, lots of accessories and gardening. And the theme of this autumn is really interesting. It's Heritage France Plants of the Future, and it's about future-proofing your garden and finding plants that are heat-resistant and flood and cold-resistant as well.
Oh, for all of those natural disasters that we're expecting due to climate change, right?
Exactly, which I think is really cool. So I'm super excited about it, and I'm hoping we might even have some interviews from them, because I will be going.
Excellent. So popping over to Paris, but you'll be coming back for next week, because you're doing...
For the 11th.
Yeah, running an event.
For this Sunday, yeah. So the theme is biodiversity. We've got Visit 11. We'll be looking at our compost in the garden, how you can do your bit for biodiversity with heritage cultivars, which we were talking about earlier. How to grow them yourselves, as well as a tour of the biodiverse gardens around the chateau. Amazingly, it's not just veg.
So wait, when is that?
That's the 11th.
That's on the 11th, which is, I believe,
that can't be right,
Tuesday.
No, it's Tuesday. It's not Tuesday. It's Sunday.
It's this Sunday.
It's Sunday, 11th. It's complete rubbish. Ignore me totally.
The 9th. That'll be the 9th of October.
At 11, not the 11th at 9, because that would be confusing.
That makes sense.
This Sunday at 11.
This Sunday. Yeah. Anything else that we can maybe pop along to?
I love chestnuts. I know they're not to everybody's taste. Sweet chestnuts. And there is a wonderful chestnut festival in Fou, which is in the Valais, on the 15th and 16th of October. I've been wanting to go to this for, I don't know, like 10 years. This year I will finally make it, because it's in my diary and I'm going to go. So you can tour the chestnut plantations, which are in the woods nearby. You can eat a million different things made of chestnuts, and you can see them being prepared and learn how to grow them yourself as well.
Fantastic. What about the plants that we should be buying and bringing home this month? What do you do in the garden in October?
I would be thinking about planting fruit trees.
Now?
Actually. Yeah, now is a really good time to plant fruit trees, because not only can you go off and taste the produce and check, oh yes, this is definitely the one I want to grow in my garden, but also this is the time when all of the nurseries are kind of got their people ready to tell you about, oh well, if you want to grow this one of these, then you probably need a one of these to pollinate it or to help it produce good fruit. And don't forget, you really don't need to grow a big one. There are loads and loads of dwarfing varieties, or that are grown on dwarf rootstocks, which are the roots of another plant but control the ultimate height of your plant. And you can have them as espaliers, which are those beautiful kind of U-shaped forms which grow against walls. You can grow them on fences. You can grow them on wires. You can grow them as stepovers. There's loads of ideas. And actually, if you are in the region, you've got time, go to the Jardin des Cinq-Sens over in Yvoire. Get on the boat from Nyon. Treat yourselves to a day trip. They have the most extraordinary and very beautiful collection of dwarf cultivars used in really unusual ways, which will fill you full of fun ideas.
This does remind me, we got a question in from Katie. I'm just going to ask this, because if you're talking about buying trees and buying fruit trees, Katie had a question who's looking to buy a tree and is not sure what the measurements mean. Like, you get 12-14, 14-16. When you're looking to buy a tree, what does it all actually mean?
So there's lots of different ways that they measure trees. You can see it sometimes in litres, which is the size of the pot. So you'd see 50 litres, 100 litres, 150, and that's quite a big pot. That's the size of the hole you're going to need. You also see sometimes the height, which is useless, because that's no indication at all as to how big it's going to get. The 12 to 14, 14 to 16, or 8 to 10 is the diameter of the trunk at 1.50 metres.
In centimetres.
In centimetres. So when you see 12 to 14, that is not the height of the tree, thank heavens, not in centimetres nor in metres. It's the size of the trunk, and actually gives you a good idea. 14 to 16 is a proper big tree. That's a reasonable sized semi-adult tree.
And diameter.
Make a decent impact in your garden. 8 to 10, however, is quite little and whippy and will look quite small.
There we go. Hope that helps, Katie. Glad we got another listener question in there. Hester, it's been great to talk to you. We'll catch up with you next month for another episode of Dig It. If anyone has any questions for Hester, you can send them in any time throughout the month. Just let us know that this is a Dig It question. We'll tackle it on the next show, studio@worldradio.ch. If you'd like to listen to this again or get more info about lactofermentation, we'll put it all up on the website this afternoon, worldradio.ch/Dig It. Thanks, Hester.
Hi.
Dig It, sponsored by Schilliger Garden Centre in Gland and Plan-les-Ouates. Schilliger, let your inspiration grow.